other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a podcast on the internet sponsored by Meta World Peace's Fleece Supplice, the agony. My name is Aaron, my personal pals, Dave.
Hello, boys.
We have Brick.
Hello, boys.
And calling from overseas, we have Old Irish Nico.
Hello.
Hello.
Boys.
This is time for a roundup on reading. We haven't done one of these in a while. Let's see what everyone's reading. Check in, look at your nightstand, your reading stack, whatever's going, processing or looking through there, and tell us about it. So, Nico, why don't you go first? Tell us about what you're reading these days.
So I pretty much only have one book, I think, because I think I mentioned the last one on the last podcast, but it's called A Gentleman in Moscow. We just read it for the book club today. And it's like, it seems to be a pretty popular book. It came out like 4 years ago or so.
Never heard of it.
And it's about this guy who, this like nobleman in the 20s in Russia. And that's when the Russian Revolution happens and they execute all the noblemen basically. And they take back all their land. And so this guy, for some reason, instead of getting executed, he manages to get sentenced to house arrest at a hotel in Moscow for the rest of his life. So then he's there for 30 years. Over the course of 30 years, he does like three or four things. It's like, it's a very kind of one of those like a bit momish, like kind of like nothing bad ever happens to him and nothing is really at risk ever. And it's just kind of, oh, he, you know, he lives through the Russian Revolution and like has a friend who's like this 9-year-old girl. And then she grows up and has a child and then leaves the child with him. And then he like raises the child. It's weird. Yeah. It's very weird. It reminded me a lot of The Shawshank Redemption. Huh. Because it's like a horrible thing, but somehow like nothing bad ever really happens to the guy, except for, I mean, he does, you know, he has to stay in the hotel, but it's like, it's a luxury hotel.
Right.
And like he eats at the super fancy restaurant every night and it's like, it could be worse.
Right.
Like every other nobleman got executed. So you're doing all right. My theory on it actually is that this guy went to the hotel, which is called the Metropole, and it's this huge, famous luxury hotel in Moscow. I looked it up, and it's like, it's enormous, and it was built like 10 years before the Russian Revolution. Mm-hmm. So my theory is he went there on vacation, stayed there, and was like, oh, this is such a cool hotel. Like, now I want to write a book about it. So I'll write a book about the Russian Revolution from the point of view of the hotel. Mm-hmm. So nothing like... So, like, things kind of come and go, but nothing ever really changes from the perspective of the hotel. And, like, I don't know. It was okay. If you like Shawshank Redemption, you probably like it. About half our book club liked it.
Interesting. The premise we described about, like, telling the Russian Revolution from the point of view of the hotel is not a bad premise necessarily, but it sounds like just sort of, like, maybe kind of a block execution or...
I would have liked it more if that was his idea, if... It was more like a bunch of little stories and like
right. You
see like a couple of characters, because in order to have this, like the guy lives there for 30 years and it's like really starts to push believability. And like the KGB is going around cracking down specifically on people like him. And he keeps doing these things that are like when he adopts the kid, the KGB finds out about it. And they go through this whole, like the author goes through this whole laborious kind of justification for why they don't actually do anything about it. Because normally they would just take the kid and like do all and like probably kill the guy and like all this stuff. And then they're like, well, maybe this time we won't. There's not a lot of drama to it.
Right.
About after halfway through, you're like, all right, so nothing's ever going to happen to this guy.
Right. Just like a story of niceness.
And the ending is shit.
Was it?
Yeah. I thought it was shit. So in the end, he, after living there for 30 years, and he has this adopted daughter who tells him specifically that she would rather, he's like, do you want to leave? Do you want to leave Russia? Do you want to go somewhere that's not under communist rule? And she's like, no, I just want to live in this hotel because I'd rather live with you than go somewhere else. And he, over the last 100 pages of the book, he talks about how the only thing that has made his life worthwhile is his adopted daughter. And then at the end, he sends her to go to America and he escapes from the hotel and stays in Russia. What? Why? It's like, this is specifically what neither of you want. I don't understand. It's wild. Huh.
And who's the author again?
I think he just needed something to happen. His name is Amor Towles.
Huh. Had you ever heard of any of his stuff before, or was this a new...
Nope.
Huh. Interesting.
Okay. Yep. Oh, intriguing. There you go.
Brick, what about you? Let's hear about your reading.
Sure. Well, I started The Phantom of the Opera, but I'm going to sit on that. We can talk about it maybe as a crew.
What do you think so far?
Not that far, but I know I'm going to like it. It reminds me of Henry James.
Mm. How are the songs? You really know the songs so far?
Yeah.
By
reading, yeah, it really comes through the page.
You read the liner notes for
the set design is nice too. I did see the play when I was a kid. I liked it very much.
Nice.
So otherwise, I'm going to share a bunch of comic books. Well, first, so my original plan was just to read one book that you guys all recommended. So I grabbed The Phantom of the Opera. I started, but only read the first few pages. So I need to go back to that Ta-Nehisi Coates book that Nico shared. And then Aaron, I read Mr. Miracle,
right,
which we since decided to do a separate episode on that. So I'm going to sit on it. So the two I got to share. First, I read Batman Year One by Frank Miller.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Oh, no. I didn't like it.
Whoa, really? Holy wow, shit. I like that.
Here's why I didn't like it, because I think I read it too late.
Huh.
I think it's, I can see that it's probably influenced like every Batman in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So now it just seems kind of bored. And
that's
tired.
Interesting.
What's the brief premise?
It's basically the origin story of Batman redid 1,000th time, but actually the first time or whatever, because the rest of it came after it. So
when was it written?
86. It's not a bad book. It's a good book. I think, so when I say I don't like it, I don't mean, I don't think it's good. I just mean it didn't click for me because, again, it seems, it's like going back and like seeing the original version of a movie you really like. It's like, okay,
right.
Well,
right.
It's interesting. I think the art's good. I like that it's like half about Inspector Gordon.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. It has that, like I said, the art is, I'm really drawn to comics that have that kind of like newspaper, like Kirby-ish style. It doesn't look exactly like it, but it's got that kind of pulpy look and coloring. So it all does that very well. And I think it very clearly sets the stage for like what the modern Batman is.
Yeah. Every subsequent like popular Batman take has come from Year One for sure. Like Frank Miller and Dave Mazzucchelli established that. It's just been, everyone steals from it now.
Yeah. So that's part of why I didn't like it. Because I didn't come to it first, yeah, you know? Sense. So part of the problem, like Batman's cool as hell. Part of the problem I have with Batman is whenever there's something with Batman, it either involves a bunch of weird characters I've never heard of, or it's the fucking origin story. And like, that's like all the Batman you ever get. And it's very rare there's anything else. So I guess there's maybe it's more disappointing than I didn't like it. But it's definitely worth reading, and it's cool, and it's a nice little historical whatever. And I got it for like $2. So
even better.
So yeah, that was that. I didn't say it was Frank Miller, and you said it, so we're good.
Yeah, Dave Mazzucchelli, the art there is incredible. I think it's some of the best art, comic art probably ever. He's so good. It's that really sort of pared down, basic style, lots of shadow, lots of like minimal character design, and it's so effective. It's really moody. I just love it. It's so good.
Great. And then I got The Witcher Omnibus.
Whoa.
Big stack of Witcher comics. We already did an entire episode on The Witcher, so we don't need to go too deep into it. As you know, I like The Witcher, so does Nico.
Right.
And this is cool. It's like four, it's a pretty thick book, probably 300 or 400 pages. No, there's no page numbers, but it's pretty thick, and there's four rather meaty like stories in there. And they all kind of follow the episodic adventures of the, you know, part of the appeal of the character is like sometimes it's the big epic story, but then also there's that X-Files episodic brand where just sometimes it's, we're just going over here and doing this thing. And so it's a lot of that.
How does comic books rank in terms of Witcher media, like game, TV show, books?
Honestly, this is better than the TV show. The art's pretty good. It's there. So they're different artists.
Does it have any names of writers or creators there?
Yeah, I can tell you. So the, there's three main through the four stories. Paul Tobin, Joe Cario, Peter Kowalski, Max Bertolini, and then the artists Carlos Padilla, Brad Simpson, Travis Currit, Marcin Blaka, Boris Pujach-Reskovich, and Nate Piekos.
I like Peter Kowalski.
Yeah, so the art's good. Even though the art's a little bit different between the different stories, the coloring and the palettes are fairly consistent. Lots of those like spooky purples and oranges and lime greens that I tend to be pretty drawn to. it does a good job of, there's just monsters to fight and characters that are slightly complicated. So I enjoyed it. A little bit of it is can be annoying because it always kind of crams in a little too much like exposition. Mm. It's like, I'm a person that fights monsters and here's why. And it's like, well, I get it if I hadn't read it, that stuff before, but it can be a little tiresome to have every single thing need to have that preamble, but still pretty good.
As what?
Where do you read the books amongst the media?
I mean, I only, like we talked about in the episode, I didn't read that much of the, I only read one of the books, like the novel or the short story books. I'd say that's probably better. So I'm going to go game, book, comic, TV show. And I like the TV show, so.
All right.
Go Witcher. Worth reading, though. It was also on sale, so I think I paid like $10 for it or something.
Nice. Like an omnibus, that's pretty good for $10.
Yeah. It's pretty thick, so.
Like grass jelly. Dave, what about you?
So while looking through my stack of books, I'm in the middle of a bunch of things. It made me realize that I don't think I finished a book since we group read Lord of the Flies, which is what, like 2 months ago?
Yeah, it's a while ago.
So that sucks. And it's not even in the past week that I've had trouble reading. It's been a couple of months now.
I mean, I think it's fair to say the world just, at least for me, I've been in a fog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least since July.
Especially like the past month.
So anyway, Kevin Barry, who you guys know I'm pretty obsessed with, has a story collection coming out in maybe February. And I've had, publishers aren't really, a lot of them aren't doing hard copies, advanced copies these days. So I'm reading it on NetGalley. And man, it's hard for me. I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but
yeah,
I'm not sure if it's just NetGalley or if it's like screen of any kind.
Can you explain that a bit more?
I don't know if I can. I struggle to read. Like, this is my favorite writer. It's a new story collection. I should be just like laser focused on, you know, it should be keeping me up at night. And the stories are great, but I really have a hard time focusing. So I've had the thing for like 6 weeks maybe, and I think I've read 5 or 6 of the stories.
What device do you...
And they're good, too. I mean, they're like as good as... It's everything that I like about his book.
Do you read the NetGalley on?
Computer, laptop.
Yeah, that's tough.
Should I try it on my phone? I don't know if that would help.
But it might be one of the, I don't know. Is it like a PDF where it would like shrink everything down? Because that would also suck. I don't know.
I hate reading on screens, too. I don't... It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'll read a newspaper article or something on a screen, and that's okay, but...
Yeah, it's tough. Man. Yeah, laptop, I feel like, would be the worst for reading a book because that's just, it's like awkward. It's just awkward to read on, you know?
Yeah. You
know. Maybe I'll give it a try on my phone. So I'm struggling through that. There's another book called
Living in Shit?
Living and Dying on the Factory Floor by a guy named David Ranney. He's like an activist in Chicago in like the 70s, maybe into the 80s. And he started working in a bunch of factories around the South Side, our friend Stuart Dybbuk's stomping grounds, and kind of agitating on behalf of workers and unions, but also trying to make some money because he was broke. And I'm only maybe a quarter of the way through it. And it's interesting, but the writing isn't all that great. So it's kind of hard to get really engaged with it. It's like I'm reading it for the story and like, I'm reading it for the story despite the writing, kind of. But if the writing were better, I would probably be finished with it by now.
Right.
But that one's slow going, too.
What made you pick that up?
But at least it's a hard copy of a book, right. So that makes it easier. It came out a couple years ago, and there were a couple of events around New York City that I thought of going to because, you know, I'm writing, in theory, writing a novel that's sort of about some of the concerns that he writes about in that book. And I did not go to the events, and I did not buy the book back when it came out. So I don't know. I got it a couple of months ago because it just something jogged my memory and whatever. Nice. So I ordered it. So like mildly disappointing as far as a piece of literature goes, but I'll probably finish it next year or the year after.
If it's like kind of the case with that kind of stuff, sometimes is the nonfiction work with that where it's like, they're writing something special here, but I really do enjoy the information. I'm sitting for that. Like a lot of music books are like that too.
Yeah,
writing
right.
Is not any great shakes, but the information is so good that you just keep reading it for that.
Are you still reading 33 and a thirds?
I've read one in a while, but I had like a binge this summer and a bunch of them were like only so-so writing wise, but the info was good. So it was like, it's still worth it to go back to it. But sometimes you're like, I wish this person would just like think about style for a second.
Yeah.
Or have a better editor, potentially.
And then, so maybe because of the fact that I'm struggling with these, with this prose books, I'm also, unlike me, randomly reading a bunch of poetry.
Interesting.
Stuart Dybbuk's two collections.
Right.
And then a couple collections each from some professors I had back in, I don't know, 15 years ago, kind of revisiting some of their work, like a lot of like heavily Midwestern poetry. And I think maybe because of what's going on, I'm having an easier time getting through some of that
just
stuff, like, you know, more bite-sized chunks of.
Yeah, and you can like read one poem at a time and kind of process it and then move on to the next one. Almost like short stories, but even less maybe investment.
Right.
So how often do you read poetry typically?
You mean before this, like in previous life?
Yeah.
Rarely, you know, a few poems a year.
Yeah. If like it's a thing for our, like our podcast is that none of us really read poetry ever.
Yeah.
At least not consistently. Maybe Brick probably most of
it. Unless it's like, TKG or something for a gag.
Exactly.
<Yeah. laughs> No, we started punting poetry when Eric left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric was our poet, like poetry expert. So maybe we should do like a poetry episode sometime soon.
Did we, when we were doing the What We Look For series, was poetry part of that?
I think it was, but I think we booted it.
And we were just like, we were like nothing.
Well, we never finished that series either. It was on the list. We only did like two of them and then moved on.
We go back maybe we should do like a whole poetry like breakdown sometime. I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, we'll need a guest
though. Yeah, we'll get fucking what's her face back.
Yeah, maybe you get her name right this time.
Got her name right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm glad it's Dybbuk too. That's awesome.
Yeah, those are, I know you have to start getting into those too. It's good. I mean, they're not... There's somewhere, I don't really know what the hell he's writing about, but I feel like that's the case. Anytime I read poetry, there's going to be automatically like half or maybe not half, like a third where I'm going to be like, oh, I don't know what that was. Let's move on to the next.
Yeah. I feel like you're reading, I mean, that's very obvious thing to say, I guess your reading mode shifts for poetry, right? And it's not always easy to make that transition. Like I haven't done poetry for the same reason where I'm trying to like decipher meaning always and like, maybe it's just about feeling
than
meaning always.
Right. Or just about this tree.
It's
it could just be about the tree. Yeah. When I taught poetry this summer, that was my approach, was like, I don't know, just try and like feel it. Don't worry about what it means. And I was just like faking
it. Yeah.
It's definitely no fun to like decode it, you know, when it's just like when it's a poem where it's like, this is just everything means something else. It's like, okay.
See, I'll put in the work to do that if the poem grabs me for some reason. Then I'll try to dig in there and figure out why.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's just like, all right, well, that's not for me.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't have the critical apparatus for poetry as I do for like fiction.
Yeah, me neither.
So it's like listening or like watching ballet is kind of the same thing. It's like, well, this is pretty impressive. This is very, obviously it's very, they're very talented and I like what I'm seeing, but I don't know how to talk about what I like about it or whether it's good or not, really. I could just tell you that I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but that's why the Boehner scale was invented.
For ballet specifically.
We all went to a ballet recital together and had a reaction and decided to invent a rating scale as a result.
This could take a dangerous turn.
Is that it, Dave, or anything else?
Yeah, that's it. Other than that, just like, I'm sure you guys just like constant journalism.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is that my, like you said, I feel like I've been super distracted. Work has been really difficult lately. Just like eating up a lot of time. And then on top of that, like, yeah, mostly just like reading Twitter and fucking polls and electoral maps now and everything. So I haven't had too much casual reading time. And the stuff I have done, a lot of it has been like start and stop immediately. Like I read the first couple pages of The Hellbound Heart by Clive Barker and stopped it. And then a couple other things here and there. It's like, I was like, oh, I'll read this tonight. And then like fell asleep immediately or something like that. One thing I did read though that I enjoyed is this graphic novel, Earth One, so Green Lantern Earth One Volume 2 by Gabriel Hardman, Karina Becko, and Jordan Boyd. This is the second volume of the series. I think I talked about the first one years ago in the podcast. This Earth One series from DC is like these, it's like alternate universe graphic novels. They're like just, I mean, it's different iterations of these heroes. I think the idea is they're a bit more, they're supposed to be younger, I think was the first iteration. Like the Superman and Batman ones were about like just younger versions of the characters. Like what if Superman was like a teenager when he became Superman as opposed to an adult? But this kind of shifted from there. This one about Green Lantern is about, there's no teens, it's all about adults. But it definitely has a feeling of like really well plotted movie about Green Lantern. And the artist, Gabriel Hardman and co-writer, was a storyboard artist. I think he still is storyboard artist. And did storyboards for like Dark Knight and other Christopher Nolan movies too. So he's got a good sort of cinematic sense to it. And it really does feel like this is, if they made a Green Lantern movie, it should look like this. It kind of feels that way. The plot here is not that interesting. The art is gorgeous. I really love the art. Gabe Hardman sort of have this like gritty sort of, I guess it's like techno realism, right? Like everything, it feels like a Ridley Scott movie in that sense, right? Everything sort of feels legit and like practical, but also kind of scary at times and compelling at times. And the color is really good too. So there's really lots of like nice bright vivid greens to go against the black of space. And there's some Easter eggs for comic nerds in here, but really nothing you would have to work too hard to understand if you didn't already know Green Lantern mythos. Why did I say mythos and not mythos? That was a weird choice. The plot is basically about like, it's sort of like a space foreign policy story. The Earth is sort of becoming a space power essentially, and then other planets don't like it, and there's some tension, and then an incident happens. I'm trying to figure out who's to blame for it, and there's some pretty obvious like current political touches, but nothing on the nose or too annoying. I really liked it. I think that it would be a good maybe sample or a good fodder for the show in a future comics episode if you guys wanted to read the first one. The first one's better. This one was still really good. I think you all would like it because it has that sort of like realistic feel, and it's not too comic booky in that sense, which is not a bad thing. I don't say comic book is a bad thing at all. I like comic books, obviously, but it's not, you don't have to pick through dense lore to figure out what's going on. It's pretty available to you. So I recommend that for sure. Really, really good. And then I also have the Spanner's Baby of Revenge, which we'll discuss on an episode soon about our dips into other genres. Spoiler, it did not go well for me. So I'll tell you more about that.
What was it called?
Spaniard's Baby of Revenge.
Oh, right. That like weird romance novel.
Harlequin romance novel. Yeah. By Claire Connolly. Oh, yeah. Did not.
That title just does not make sense on first hearing it.
Yeah. I mean, so the plot is exactly that. Like, the title tells you everything you need to know about this book and what it's about. It's about a Spaniard with a baby that he's trying to get revenge with.
What's the title again?
Spaniard's Baby of Revenge.
Yeah, wow. Not good.
Yeah.
And we discovered there's a whole like subgenre of revenge baby books in the romance genre. So we'll dive into that in greater depth soon.
Wait, what does it mean though?
So this guy, one of the main characters is like the scion of a wealthy Spanish business family, and he impregnates the daughter, the like unwitting innocent daughter of his rival business family, and then he wants to use the baby as leverage to like make her give up control. That's the whole like, but none of it actually matters because it's all about like falling in love. It's 100% bananas. So I'm looking forward to getting to that later on.
Bananas.
Well, I think we're wrapping up then. So tell us what you thought about what are you reading these days on what's on your nightstand, what's on your Kindle list, dear reader or listener. Check us out on Twitter at YakBabies and email us your thoughts at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com.
I might have lost
that. And also, check out our merch.
Someone else want to wrap it up.
He froze like 30 seconds ago. Maybe
something else you can find there.
I think he just finished edging.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, okay.
He's back and happy.
I'm wrapping the podcast up because I realized I had frozen. I was like, well, I was going to keep going here. So Twitter, Gmail, our merch. Oh, and also Patreon.com/YakBabies. You can get our secret podcast there for only $1 a month.
Been a good run on there lately.
No shit. I gotta say, like, not to like like boost our own material, whatever, but like, or like laughing at our own jokes, but like the most recent Monster Draft episode is fucking good. It's really good. It's definitely worth your dollar. So I would go check it out.
Man, I'd forgotten all about those brown candies, the brown lemon totally. Candies. Goddamn.
There's some insane stuff in that episode. Some stuff we ate and some stuff we just mentioned and said. There's just some good content. Dave and I are both just drunk enough, and Brick is like hyped up on caffeine.
I was all thumbs up.
Just Brick enough. Yeah.
There's this part where you make a joke and then you like laugh at your own joke and then so do a little like kind of riff on it and like under your breath. It's so fucking funny. I love it. So check that out. Until then, Yak Babies, yak it off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.